Chapter 5 Questioners. They should be back by now. Egwene fluttered the painted silk fan vigorously, glad the nights were at least a little cooler than the days. Tyran women carried the fans all the time, the nobles at least, and the wealthy. But as far as she could see, they did no good at all except when the sun was down, and not much then. Even the lamps, great golden mirrored things on silvered wall brackets, seemed to add to the heat. What can be keeping them? An hour, Moiraine had promised them, for the first time in days, and then she had left without explanation after a bare 5 minutes. Did she give any hint of why they wanted her, Avienda? Or who wanted her, for that matter? Seated cross-legged on the floor beside the door, large green eyes startling in her dark tanned face, the Aiel woman shrugged. In coat and breeches and soft boots, shufa looped about her neck, she appeared unarmed. Karine whispered her message to Moiraine, said I. I would not have been proper to listen. I am sorry, I said I. Guiltily, Egwene fingered the great serpent ring on her right hand, the golden serpent biting its own tail. As an accepted, she should have been wearing it on the third finger of her left hand, but letting the High Lords believe that they had four full Aes Sedai inside the stone kept them on their best manners, or what passed for manners among Tyran nobles. Moiraine did not lie, of course. She never said they were more than accepted. But she never said they were accepted either, and let everyone think what they wanted to think, believe what they thought they saw. Moiraine could not lie, but she could make truth dance a fine jig. It was not the first time Egwene and the others had pretended to full sisterhood since leaving the tower, but more and more she felt uncomfortable deceiving Avienda. She liked the Aiel woman, thought they could be friends if they could ever come to know one another. But that hardly seemed possible as long as Avienda thought Egwene was Aes Sedai. The Aiel woman was there only at Moiraine's order, issued for unspoken purposes of her own. Egwene suspected it was to give them an Aiel bodyguard, as if they had not learned to protect themselves. Still, even if she and Avienda did become friends, she could not tell her the truth. The best way to keep a secret was to make sure no one knew who did not absolutely have to know. Another point Moiraine had made. Sometimes Egwene found herself wishing the Aes Sedai could be wrong, glaring wrong, just once. In a way that would not mean disaster, of course. That was the rub. Tanchico, Nynaeve muttered. Her dark, wrist-thick braid hung down her back to her waist as she stared out of one of the narrow windows, casements swung out in the hope of catching a night breeze. On the broad river Erinin below bobbed the lanterns of a few fishing boats that had not ventured downriver, but Egwene doubted she saw them. There is nothing for it but to go to Tanchico, it seems. Nynaeve gave an unconscious hitch to her green dress, with its wide neck that bared her shoulders. She did that a good deal. She would have denied wearing the dress for Lan, Moiraine's warder. She would have, if Egwene had dared make the suggestion. But green, blue, and white seemed to be Lan's favorite colors on women, and every dress that was not green, blue, or white had vanished from Nynaeve's wardrobe. Nothing for it. She did not sound happy. Egwene caught herself giving an upward tug to her own dress. They felt odd, these dresses that just clung to the shoulders. On the other hand, she did not believe she could bear to be more covered. Light as it was, the pale red linen felt like wool. She wished she could bring herself to wear the filmy gowns Berylaine wore. Not that they were suitable for public eyes, but they certainly did appear to be cool. Stop fretting over comfort, she told herself sternly. Keep your mind on the business at hand. Perhaps, she said aloud. Myself, I am not convinced. A long, narrow table, polished till it glistened, ran down the middle of the room. A tall chair stood at the end near Egwene, lightly carved and touched here and there with gilt, quite plain for Tyr, while the side chairs had progressively lower backs until those at the far end seemed little more than benches. Egwene had no idea what purpose the Tyrans had put the room to. She and the others used it for questioning two prisoners taken when the stone fell. She could not force herself to go into the dungeons, though Rand had ordered all of the implements that had decorated the guardroom walls melted or burned. Neither Nynaeve nor Elaine had been eager to return either. Besides, this brightly lit room with its clean-swept green tile floor and its wall panels carved with the three crescents of Tyr was a sharp contrast to the grim gray stone of the cells, all dim and dank and dirty. That had to have some softening effect on the two women in prisoners' rough-woven woolens. Only that drab brown dress, however, would have told most people that Joya Bier, standing beyond the table with her back turned, was a prisoner at all. She had been white Aja, and had lost none of the white's cool arrogance on shifting her allegiance to the black. Every line of her proclaimed that she stared rigidly at the far wall of her own choice, and for no other reason. Only a woman who could channel would have seen the thumb-thick flows of air that held Joya's arms to her sides and lashed her ankles together. A cage woven of air kept her eyes straight ahead. Even her ears were stopped up, so she could not hear what anyone said until they wanted her to. Once again, Egwene checked the shield woven from spirit that blocked Joya from touching the true source. It held, as she knew it must. She herself had woven all the flows around Joya and tied them to maintain themselves, but she could not be easy in the same room with a dark friend who had the ability to channel, even if it was blocked. Worse than just a dark friend, Black Aja. Murder was the least of Joya's crimes. She should have been bowed down under her weight of broken oaths, blasted lives, and blighted souls. Joya's fellow prisoner, her sister in the Black Aja, lacked her strength. Standing stoop-shouldered at the far end of the table, head down, Amiko Nagoyan seemed to sink in on herself under Egwene's gaze. There was no need to shield her. Amiko had been still during her capture. Still able to sense the true source, she would never again touch it, never again channel. The desire to, the need to, would remain, as sharp as the need to breathe, and her loss would be there for as long as she lived, Saidar forever out of reach. Egwene wished she could find in herself even a shred of pity, but she did not wish for it very hard. Amiko murmured something at the tabletop. What? Nynaeve demanded. Speak up. Amiko raised her face humbly on its slender neck. She was still a beautiful woman, with large, dark eyes, but there was something different about her that Egwene could not quite put her finger on. Not the fear that made her clutch her coarse prisoner's dress with both hands. Something else. Swallowing, Amiko said, You should go to Tanchico. You've told us that 20 times, Nynaeve said roughly. 50 times. Tell us something new. Name names we do not already know. Who still in the White Tower is Black Aja?
I do not know. You must believe me.
Amiko sounded tired, utterly beaten. Not at all the way she had sounded when they were the prisoners and she the jailer.
Before we left the tower, I knew only Leandrin, Chesmal, and Rihanna. No one knew more than 2 or 3 others, I think, except Leandrin. I have told you everything I know.
Then you are remarkably ignorant for a woman who expected to rule part of the world when the Dark One breaks free, Egwene said dryly, snapping her fan shut for emphasis. It still stunned her how easily she could say that now. Her stomach still clenched, and icy fingers still crawled her spine, but she no longer wanted to scream or run weeping. It was possible to become used to anything.
I overheard Leandrin that once, talking to Tamila, Amiko said wearily, starting a tale she had told them many times.
In the first days of her captivity, she had tried to improve her story, but the more she elaborated, the more she had tangled herself in her own lies. Now she almost always told it the same way, word for word.
If you could have seen Leandrin's face when she saw me. She would have murdered me on the spot had she thought I had heard anything. And Tamila likes to hurt people. She enjoys it. I only heard a little before they saw me. Leandrin said there was something in Tanchico, something dangerous to him.
She meant Rand. She could not say his name.
and a mention of the dragon reborn was enough to send her into tears. Leandrin said it was dangerous to whoever used it, too, almost as dangerous as to him. That is why she had not already gone after it, and she said being able to channel would not protect him. She said, when we find it, his filthy ability will bind him for us. Sweat ran down her face, but she shivered almost uncontrollably. Not a word had changed. Egwene opened her mouth, but Nynaeve spoke first. I've heard enough of this. Let us see if the other has anything new to say. Egwene glared at her, and Nynaeve stared back just as hard, neither blinking. Sometimes she thinks she's still the wisdom, Egwene thought grimly, and I'm still the village girl to teach about herbs. She had better realize things are different now. Nynaeve was strong in the power, stronger than Egwene, but only when she could actually manage to channel. Unless angry, Nynaeve could not channel at all. Elaine usually smoothed things over when it came to this, as it did more often than it should. By the time Egwene thought of smoothing matters herself, she'd almost always dug in her heels and flared back, and trying to be soothing then would only be backing down. That was how Nynaeve would see it, she was sure. She could not remember Nynaeve ever making any move to back down, so why should she? This time Elaine was not there. Moiraine had summoned the daughter heir with a word and a gesture to follow the maiden who had come for the Aes Sedai. Without her, the tension stretched, each of the accepted waiting for the other to blink first. Avienda barely breathed. She kept herself strictly out of their confrontations. No doubt she considered it simple wisdom to stand clear. Strangely, it was Amiko who broke the impasse this time, though likely all she meant to do was demonstrate her cooperation. She turned to face the far wall, waiting patiently to be bound. The foolishness of it struck Egwene suddenly. She was the only woman in the room who could channel, unless Nynaeve grew angry or Joya's shield failed. She tested the weave of spirit again without thinking, and she indulged in a staring match, while Amiko waited to accept her bonds. At another time she might have laughed at herself aloud. Instead she opened herself to Saidar, that never-seen, ever-felt glowing warmth that seemed always to be just beyond the corner of her eye. The one power filled her, like joyous life itself redoubled, and she wove the flows around Amiko. Nynaeve merely grunted. It was doubtful she was mad enough to sense what Egwene was doing. She could not, without her temper up. Yet she could see Amiko stiffen as the flows of air touched her, then slump, half supported by the flows, as if to show how little she was resisting. Avienda shuddered, the way she had taken to doing whenever she knew the power was being channeled near her. Egwene wove blocks for Amiko's ears. Questioning them one at a time did little good if they could hear each other's stories, and turned to Joya. She shifted her fan from hand to hand so she could wipe them on her dress, and stopped with a grimace of distaste. Her sweaty palms had nothing to do with the temperature.
Her face, Avienda said abruptly.
And surprisingly, she almost never spoke unless addressed by Moiraine or one of the others.
Amiko's face.
She does not have the look she did, as if the years had passed her by, not as much as she did.
Is that because she was... because she was stilled?
She finished in a breathless rush. She had picked up a few habits, being so much around them. No woman of the tower could speak of stilling without a chill. Egwene moved down the table to where she could see Amiko's face from the side and yet stay out of Joya's vision. Joya's eyes always turned her stomach to a lump of ice. Avienda was right. That was the difference she herself had noticed and not understood. Amiko looked young, perhaps younger than her years, but it was not quite the agelessness of Aes Sedai who had worked years with the One Power.
You have sharp eyes, Avienda, but I don't know if this has anything to do with stilling.
It must, though, I suppose. I don't know what else could cause it. She realized that did not sound very much like an Aes Sedai, who generally spoke as if they knew everything. When an Aes Sedai said she did not know, she usually managed to make her denial appear to cloak volumes of knowledge.
While she was racking her brain for something properly portentous, Nynaeve came to her rescue. Relatively few Aes Sedai have ever been burned out, Avienda, and far fewer stilled. Burned out was what it was called when it happened by accident. Officially, stilling resulted from trial and sentence. Egwene could not see the point of it, really. It was like having two words for falling down the stairs, depending on whether you tripped or were pushed. For that, most Aes Sedai seemed to see it the same, except when teaching novices or accepted. Three words, actually. Men were gentled, must be gentled before they went mad. Only now there was Rand, and the tower did not dare gentle him. Nynaeve had put on a lecturing tone, no doubt trying to sound Aes Sedai. She was doing an imitation of Shiriam before a class, Egwene realized, hands clasped at her waist, smiling slightly, as if it were all so simple when you applied yourself. "Stilling is not a thing anyone would choose to study, you understand," Nynaeve continued. "It is generally accepted to be irreversible. What makes a woman able to channel cannot be replaced once it is removed, any more than a hand that has been cut off can be healed back into existence. At least, no one had ever been able to heal stilling. There had been attempts. What Nynaeve said was generally true, yet some sisters of the Brown Aja would study almost anything if given the chance, and some yellow sisters, the best healers, would try to learn to heal anything. But even a hint of success at healing a woman who had been stilled was non-existent. Aside from that one hard fact, little is known. Women who are stilled seldom live more than a few years. They seem to stop wanting to live. They give up. As I said, it is an unpleasant subject. Avienda shifted uncomfortably. "I only thought that might be it," she said in a low voice. Egwene thought it might be, too. She resolved to ask Moiraine, if she ever saw her without Avienda there as well. It seemed to her that their deceit got in the way almost as much as it helped. Let us see if Joya still tells the same tale, too. Even so, she had to take herself in hand before she could unravel the flows of air woven around the dark friend. Joya must have been stiff from standing so still for so long, but she turned smoothly to face them. The sweat beating her forehead could not diminish her dignity and presence, any more than her drab, rough dress lessened the sense of her being there by choice. She was a handsome woman, with something motherly about her face, despite its ageless smoothness, something comforting. But the dark eyes set in that face made a hawk's look kind. She smiled at them, a smile that never reached those eyes. "The light illumine you. May the hand of the Creator shelter you." "I will not hear that out of you." Nynaeve's voice was quiet and calm, but she tossed her braid over her shoulder and gripped the end in her fist, the way she did when angry or uneasy. Egwene did not think she was uneasy. Joya did not seem to make Nynaeve's skin crawl as she did Egwene's. "I have repented my sins," Joya said smoothly. "The dragon is reborn and he holds Kalandor. The prophecies are fulfilled. The Dark One must fail. I can see that now. My repentance is real. No one can walk so long in the shadow that she cannot come again to the light." Nynaeve's face had grown darker by the word. Egwene was sure she was furious enough to channel now, but if she did, it would probably be to strangle Joya. Egwene did not believe Joya's repentance any more than Nynaeve, of course, but the woman's information might be real. Joya was quite capable of a cold decision to go over to what she believed would be the winning side. Or she might only be buying time, lying in hope of rescue. Lies should not have been possible for an Aes Sedai, even one who had lost all right to the name. Not outright lies. The very first of the three oaths, taken with the oath rod in hand, should have seen to that. But whatever oaths to the Dark One were sworn on joining the Black Aja, they seemed to sever all three oaths. Well, the Amyrlin had sent them out to hunt the Black Aja, to hunt Leandrin and the other 12 who had done murder and fled the tower, and all they had to go on now was what these two could or would tell them. "Give us your tale again," Egwene commanded. "Use different words this time. I am tired of listening to memorized stories. If she was lying, there was more chance she would trip herself up telling it differently. We will hear you out. That was for Nynaeve's benefit. She gave a loud sniff, then a curt nod.
Joya shrugged.
As you wish. Let me see. Different words. The false dragon, Mazrim Time, who was captured in Saldaea, can channel with incredible strength, perhaps as much as Randall Thor, or nearly so, if the reports can be believed. Before he can be brought to Tar Valon and gentled, Leandrin means to break him free. He will be proclaimed as the Dragon Reborn, his name given as Randall Thor, and then he will be set to destruction on such a scale as the world has not seen since the War of the Hundred Years.
That is impossible, Nynaeve broke in. The pattern will not accept a false dragon, not now that Rand has proclaimed himself.
Egwene sighed. They had had this out before, but Nynaeve always argued the point. She was not sure Nynaeve really believed that Rand was the dragon reborn, no matter what she said, no matter the prophecies and Kalendor and the fall of the stone. Nynaeve was just enough older than he to have looked after him when he was a child, just as she had after Egwene. He was an Emmons Fielder, and Nynaeve still saw her first duty as protecting the people of Emmons Field.
Is that what Moiraine told you? Joya asked with a touch of contempt.
Moiraine has spent little time in the tower since she was raised, and not much more with her sisters anywhere. I suppose she knows the workings of village life, perhaps even something of the politics between nations, but she does claim certainty about matters learned only through study and discussion with those who know. Still, she might be correct. Mazrim Time might well find it impossible to proclaim himself, but if others do it for him, is there a difference that matters?
Egwene wished Moiraine would come back. The woman would not speak so confidently if Moiraine were there. Joya knew very well that she and Nynaeve were only accepted. It made a difference.
Go on, Egwene said, almost as harshly as Nynaeve. And remember, different words.
Of course, Joya replied, as though responding to a gracious invitation, but her eyes glittered like chips of black glass.
You can see the obvious result. Randall Thor will be blamed for the depredations of Randall Thor. Even proof that they are not the same man may well be dismissed. After all, who can say what tricks the Dragon Reborn can play? Perhaps put himself in two places at once. Even the sort who have always rallied to a false dragon will hesitate in the face of the indiscriminate slaughter and worse laid at his feet. Those who do not shrink at such butchery will seek out the Randall Thor who seems to revel in blood. The nations will unite as they did in the Aiel War. She gave Avienda an apologetic smile, incongruous beneath those merciless eyes, but no doubt much more quickly. Even the Dragon Reborn cannot stand against that, not forever. He will be crushed before the last battle even begins by the very ones he was meant to save. The Dark One will break free, the day of Tarman Gaiden will come, and the Shadow will cover the earth and remake the pattern for all time. That is Leandrin's plan. There was not a hint of satisfaction in her voice, but no horror either. It was a plausible story, more plausible than Amiko's tale of a few eavesdropped sentences, but Egwene believed Amiko and not Joya, perhaps because she wanted to. A vague threat in Tanchico was easier to face than this fully fleshed plan to turn every hand against Rand. No, she thought. Joya is lying. I am sure she is. Yet they could not afford to ignore either story. But they could not chase after both, not with any hope of success. The door banged open, and Moiraine strode in, with Elaine following. The daughter heir was frowning at the floor in front of her toes, lost in dark thoughts. But Moiraine! For once the Aes Sedai's serenity had vanished. Fury painted her face.